This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Conspiracy, the show, the world's most trusted conspiracy theory podcast, with your hosts, Adam Todd Brown and Olivia Haidar.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Conspiracy, the show. I'm your host, Adam Todd Brown. Joining me as co-host this week, I got a guest co-host. Zach Johnston is here.
I'm happy to be back and back to talk about CIA and all that wonderful intrigue and entertainment.
It's so fun. It's one of my favorite topics. Everyone knows Zach. You've been on three times now, maybe? Probably more than that.
Yeah, something like that.
Three, four, returning champion, Zach Johnston.
It's funny because this, I mean, people read the title of the episode, but this sort of came up just in chit chat, because it's sort of people tend to be very dismissive whenever CIA is brought up around an entertainer, whether it be Kathryn Bigelow or Taylor Swift or anything like that. And they're so dismissive about what the CIA does, where it's this thing. Do people not understand what they do? So we started talking about the history of the CIA working in the arts and how it's some of it's very obvious and the CIA talks about it themselves. And this sort of came to fruition just looking at that and hopefully get a little education for people of how deeply the CIA has always been entrenched in the arts and especially music.
Yeah. And not always to the detriment of the arts, as we'll find. Sometimes they're just like, oh, that's good for us if that gets popular. So they'll put money behind it. Not CIA money. They don't send you an envelope of cash with the CIA stamped on it, but they'll get you the money that you need so you can flourish.
Yeah, it's sort of the thing where we understand shell companies exist, but think that Donald Trump is the only one making a shell company when it's like, no, CIA has tons of shell companies. They have production companies and they have record labels and they have art houses and galleries and things all over the world and in the United States and have been doing so since they started.
And here's the thing. They fucking better. As much tax money as we spend on them, they goddamn better have all of that shit. All of it.
Yeah, and it's sort of, there's a slight irony to the fact that a lot of the great art created in the 20th century was able to become great art because CIA was secretly funding it, like with the modern art scene or with the jazz scene and things like that. Where would those art scenes have been without that massive amount of money they would influx into there?
What is interesting to me is how many articles and stories like this come directly from the CIA's website.
Right.
They're not ashamed of it at all.
It's interesting in that I think it's hangover from the Cold War, where it's like we still have this idea that we were absolutely the good guys fighting the evil empire. And so it's something to be very proud of. This is going to be looked back in history as great.
Yeah. I don't know if I agree. I don't know if I agree with them. History might one day look poorly upon the CIA. Unless they just orchestrate some coup that puts them in power forever, they wouldn't do that after they clearly tried it in 1980 with Reagan. No.
Yeah. And that was a failure, right? Nothing ever came of that. The CIA had never became president, right?
And Reagan was really staunch in pushing back on everything the CIA wanted to do in the 80s, especially in Latin America, stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's sort of. That's why. And I think part of it is people simply don't know. You can't expect everybody to know everything about how the intelligence community in the U.S. works here or abroad. People simply, you can't follow everything. And so that's kind of why we're here, because this stuff starts at the beginning of even the pre-CIA, the OSS, where should we just jump right in? With
the, let's talk about the Miles Copeland.
Yeah. So Miles Copeland Jr., who's one of the co-founders of the CIA through the OSS.
Yes.
Huge jazz guy, huge musician, lover, just loved jazz to the huge degree. And I think what's important to understand about the creation of the CIA with these co-founding members, whether they were Nazis or Americans or what have you, is that they specifically recruited people who were journalists, who were movie producers, who were writers, who were artists, who were into all of these communities already. They didn't just go and be like, hey, we're going to just grab people randomly off the street who are in law enforcement. They specifically, you would pull people out of these communities that they already existed in. And so part of that was with Michael Copeland, who was as huge in the jazz scene. He sort of brought, of course, he worked in the Middle East and things like that with, and has his whole career. But part of the reason people like him were pulled in is because they already had contact in those scenes and could use those people to their benefit. So if you even look at, without getting too far off track here, because we're talking about music, but you know, the original Animal Farm film that was produced in the UK, that was funded by the CIA. The CIA actually went to Sonia Orwell and got the rights from her based on her wanting to meet Clark Gable. And the CIA set up that meeting so they could buy the rights and then funded that film fully and changed the end to make it purely anti-communist. So that's the sort of shit that the CIA started with. I mean, that's in the 50s.
Such a long time ago.
Right. And of course, they're not doing that now in film. But
No. And what I find interesting about Miles Copeland, I don't think we've even said it yet, but he is the father of Stuart Copeland, who was the drummer in The Police.
Yes.
And I think that is the kind of coincidence that people don't take seriously enough. One of the things you will read a lot if you start delving into the CIA and their various shenanigans over the years, they love a family band. Mm. Movies make it seem like the CIA guy is going home and being like, no, I don't want you to know what I'm up to. Bullshit. He's going home and indoctrinating that shit into his whole family. Yes. So they fucking do CIA shit too. You saw that with Jonestown. Aside from Jim Jones, that entire upper level, all the management, all came from one family, the Layton family. And in this case, you get Miles Copeland Jr., one of the founding members of the CIA. He's got a son, Stuart, who's in a band called The Police, for one thing. It's like these motherfuckers think they're slick.
I know, right?
But think about when The Police arrive on the scene, right? When the punk movement is starting, The Police are magically right there. And we're supposed to take it as total coincidence that the founder of the CIA's son just happens to be in a band that stumbles upon the scene right when punk is taking off. And then his other son, Miles Copeland III, starts a record label that is where? The cutting edge of the new wave movement.
Yeah.
So at what point do you accept that that's not a coincidence and that maybe the guy who played drums on Every Breath You Take is also in the fucking CIA?
And also Every Breath You Take, famously about 1984, George Orwell's book.
Is it?
Yes, that's specifically about that book. It's about, it's the government or Big Brother watching you every breath you take. And
I'd always heard it was about a stalker.
Well, Big Brother is a stalker.
Yeah, I guess it's about a stalker.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing where, Sting and I think Copeland are both, you can look up on YouTube or whatever when they talk about making that song, is specifically about 1984, which, again, coincidence? I mean, come on. That's a book that the CIA used through the USIA extensively throughout the world when we put them in our American libraries because it's such a anti-communist book, perceived as anti-authoritarianism, but whatever. We're not that nuanced sometimes. And that's just it. I think Miles III actually says in an interview that's on the CIA website, it's like, I had a choice. I could go in CIA like my dad, or I could go into music. Yep. And I chose to go into music. I'm like, if you have that choice, you're already in the CIA, dude.
Absolutely. And also, your dad did both. Why can't you do both?
Oh, yeah. And just not say you're doing the other side because it's more fun that way.
And people fail to take into account that the CIA's original and still kind of their mission is just gathering information and figuring out what to do with it.
Yes.
And the gathering of that information takes a lot of people.
Yes.
And so sometimes a person's job is just, hey, monitor this fucking magazine or listen to this podcast or watch this foreign TV show. And if you see anything that you think we would want to know about, just pass it along. Sometimes it's just that. Being a CIA asset doesn't always mean you're Jack Reacher or whatever the fuck. Well, I don't know. Is Jack Reacher a CIA guy?
And some of this is so on the nose. CIA literally has a department that's the psychological warfare department.
Yeah.
It's how do you get around the fact that, well, how do you do that then if you're going to do psychological warfare? That's not shooting guns. That's not beating people up in the streets and stabbing people with poison pens. That's using media and culture to fuck with people's brains to get them to think the way you want to think.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest misconceptions about the 50s and 60s is that nothing came of MKUltra. In the pushback you always get with MKUltra, because that, before it was discovered, huge conspiracy theory.
Yep.
And then we find out it's real. And the pushback you always get is nothing came of it. And they were just trying to work on interrogation techniques. And one, that shit lasted decades. It would not have lasted decades if nothing ever, ever, ever came of it. And I know people don't want to think about it, maybe, but look at all these weird assassinations that happened, especially on into the 80s. John Lennon, the attempted assassination of Reagan.
Yeah.
It's all very MK Ultra shit. I wouldn't be surprised if the CIA wrote Catcher in the Rye. J.D. Salinger writes one book and then fucks off forever. Yeah, why? Because he went back to his desk job?
Right. But they're always so on the nose with this stuff. Like I said, with the Animal Farms thing, they were proud that they produced that film and made it an anti-communist film. Did you watch that John Lennon documentary on Apple TV about his death?
I did not.
It's interesting. I understand that Lennon's a weird figure to begin with. But taking that away, the whole Mark David Chapman thing is just so fucking weird. The whole way the murder went down is so weird, where he just sat there and started reading the book after he shot him. And then Milton fucking Klein, of all people, Milton Klein, the psychologist behind MK Ultra for CIA, was the only psychologist that was brought in to interview him. After he brought him in to interview him, Mark David Chapman had a massive freak out where he was climbing the walls. And then a couple days later, went completely silent and said, "I'm guilty. God told me to say I'm guilty." Odd that MK Ultra got involved and that happened. Must be a coincidence.
That all sounds like coincidence to me. What the hell, people?
Yeah.
Of course something came from MK Ultra. We got robot assassins out of it, it seems like.
It seems like, especially, and they actually address this in the second episode of that documentary pretty deeply. They don't go so far to say that it's provable, but it's weird. It's so fucking weird that of all the people in New York, all the psychologists they could have brought in with this, they brought in Milton Klein. And then, obviously, if you look at John Lennon, he was a huge force in New York. He had tens of thousands of people protesting in the streets, and he was coming out of retirement. And all those interviews John Lennon was doing in 1980 was going right back on that of, hey, we can't be apathetic against this government. We have to get back in the streets, and we have to fight this war machine. And, oh, 2 weeks later, he's dead.
Yeah. I don't know how you write stuff like that off as a coincidence. And one that we forgot to mention, Bob Marley.
Yes.
We did an episode a while back. It had all these weird audio issues, so we should almost do it again. But it was about a Netflix documentary that is about the time Bob Marley was almost assassinated in Jamaica in, I think, 76 or 78. Yeah. That part's not important. But what is important is the cameraman who was documenting this concert that Bob Marley was putting on used to work for the CIA.
Right.
And people, are we really supposed to be like, oh, well, that's nothing. They did say used to, so he doesn't work for the CIA now. It's like, fuck it, of course he does.
Yeah.
And just as if by magic, Bob Marley almost gets assassinated while that guy's around. Go fucking figure.
Go figure. And then coincidentally gets a form of cancer that kills him immediately.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, yeah, that. Coincidences, to be clear, coincidences do happen like that. People get sick and die. Also, CIA very well known for getting people sick and dying.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they are on the record during the church committee of being like, hey, we use these toxins to kill people. I mean, they literally show it.
Yeah. If I think the next piece of Conspiracy the Show merch I want to produce for no one to buy, hey, don't mind us, we don't need to make extra money or anything, would be a shirt with the shellfish toxin gun on it.
Yeah,
that would be, that's going to be a conversation starter if you wear that out in public.
Yeah,
but people are going to be like, what movie's that from? And you get to say, the church committee hearings. Go look that up.
That's from real life, motherfuckers. But
this episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
So with what Copeland sort of started in the 50s, which I think is pertinent to today because it has not changed, is using musicians and artists unwittingly. Again, nobody took Louis Armstrong or Pollock to Langley and was like, hey, you're going to work for us now to be a patriotic American. When I was living in Prague, there's a huge historical pride in the fact that all these black jazz musicians came to Prague in the 1960s and did concerts. You know, Billie Holiday, Louis Armstrong, Miles Davis, all these huge black artists. So in their point of view, it was like, this was a place where they could come and do their music without racism, basically.
Yes.
And what we found out was actually happening is people like Copeland and CIA was shell funding them to go there to show how great American culture was as part of the Cold War. And obviously they were going to beyond Prague, they were going to Poland, they were going to Congo, they were going to
everywhere.
Yeah, they were going to the Middle East, Lebanon, they're going to Indonesia. And some of it gets really, really dark beyond, oh, they're just going there to show off American culture. A lot of it was using, and this is all documented on the CIA website, CIA.gov. This isn't stuff that's on some Reddit thread. This is stuff where it's like, no, this is what we did and we're proud of it.
And you know, why wouldn't they be? Because it is technically their job.
Yeah.
And that's why even I know there are people being sent out right now. Again, I mentioned that Department of Defense group. They have more undercover operatives than the CIA, or so the CIA would like us to believe. What do you think they're doing?
Right.
You think they're not showing up when something weird's happening in the United States that the government might want to get a handle on? I've said it so many times. If you're doing anything counter to the government, no matter how small, be very suspicious when new people show up wanting to help out.
Right.
Because that could so easily be the government. Don't get hung up on this idea that, oh, I would never have enough of an ego to think the government would want to follow me. Yeah, they would. Yeah, they would. Yeah. You never know what you might fucking blossom into if they don't nip that shit in the bud.
Especially if you have a following. Because even a small following can turn into a movement so easily. I mean, just this is a kind of dumb example, but look at somebody like Joe Rogan, who went from being a comedian UFC fight color commentator to having the biggest audience in the fucking country.
Now
that's dangerous. Whether it doesn't matter what side anybody's on or where it falls, it's dangerous to the status quo because it's somebody new. You don't know what the fuck they're going to say, what they're going to do with their audience. Going back to John Lennon, look what he did with his audience. He turned Beatles fans into people who were marching in the streets in tens of thousands in the streets of Manhattan against the war. You know, and I don't care what anybody says, people like Taylor Swift today, she could change an election. They talk about this in The Guardian when all that PSYOP shit was going on last year, where it's like, no, people are like, yeah, I would march with her and I would vote differently if she told me to. And that sort of got lost in the US. The UK or The Guardian tends to report stuff like that a little bit better.
Yes, sure do.
Because they're owned by a charitable trust. They're not owned by a conglomerate corporation. Makes it a little bit different. And their trust is only journalists instead of people who are also on the board of Raytheon and DuPont and Boeing. And so you see a little bit better journalism there. Not that it's perfect, but that's real. That is 100% real. Taylor Swift had a look at the Golden Globes and probably put Joy Coy's career back a decade. That's power, dude. And game recognized game.
And think about what we always hear about elections in the United States right now. We're not all voting, but no matter how many of us are voting, coming down to like 10, 20,000 votes in a few different states. So it doesn't take a huge following to push that kind of needle. Maybe you only have sway over 3 or 4,000 people. But what if you're part of a bigger collective and they're all saying that same thing and they all have that smaller following that's going to amount to a bigger following? The government has the resources to send people out to all of them.
Yes.
Every single one of them. The government has someone they can send your way who will fuck shit up.
And we've been doing it, and it's documented very well. We've been doing it. I mean, Elvis, we had FBI in his entourage. I mean, if you look at even the hip hop scene, there's so many connections to both the CIA, FBI, various other organizations, DEA, blah, blah, blah. In the 80s and 90s, through the crack cocaine epidemic, which was fairly well documented to be CIA backed, but also through the so-called secret meetings that people like Ice Cube talk about, where CIA helped direct hip hop away from public policy and social justice and change towards, Dr. Dre says in an MMSM, a rap about big screen TVs and bitches and parties.
Here's my thing about Ice Cube saying that. I've always had a pet conspiracy theory that Ice Cube is actually the government. So coming from Ice Cube, I believe it because I feel like he's the one the government went to and was like, hey, you want to maybe change rap music for us a little bit? We'll tell you what to do. You think you're the guy to do it. And like, look at the fucking ramification-free career that anti-Semite has had.
That's what I was just going to say. It's crazy like what he gets away with.
Absolutely the Mel Gibson of rap. And you can talk about Love and Ice Cube all you want, and almost never will anyone be like, oh, so you fucking hate Jews, right? But Mel Gibson, say you love a Mel Gibson movie, people are going to be like, you fucking animal. You fucking monster.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's might be part of it because he put out that diss track where he's very anti-Semitic in, what was that, 89 or something like that? And I bet that was just like, it's like a dog whistle for CIA where it's like, ooh, we can get to this guy.
Oh, man. The album that song is on, he kind of predicted the LA riots. There's a song on there called Black Korea that, for one thing, is just objectively racist. It is about a minute and a half of the most racist shit you will ever hear. He never gets called to task for it. He gets to do fucking kids movies. I'm telling you, I think Ice Cube is the government.
Yeah, there's something there that gives him that hall pass, man. And and going back to the early years of the CIA and with musicians, that was the point. These people got hall passes because they were indirectly working for the government. And you look at somebody like Louis Armstrong, he got to do this shit all around the world. And when I say it gets dark is when he went to Congo, inadvertently, he was responsible for Lumumba getting assassinated and removed and Mobutu coming in and completely fucking that country over to this day, to the point that we are still running operations now using the Rwanda militias and fucking that country over so badly right now, today in 2024. Nobody talks about it or cares. And it's just like, okay, Louis Armstrong didn't kill Lumumba, but he had a hand in it indirectly.
Yeah, which is the other thing it's important to point out. People might not always know that they're working with the CIA. I don't think we'll talk about Jackson Pollock in a minute. We can move on to it right now because modern art, American modern art, Jackson Pollock, back when people like Jackson Pollock were still painting and not fatally drunk driving their vehicles, the CIA was using their shit as a promotional tool. And if you look at that group of artists, they're all people who probably would have been more likely to side with Russia in a lot of matters. But the CIA didn't care. I mean, the CIA cares about that, but they were like, no, this we can use this to make the United States look good overseas.
And part of the policy of the CIA back then was it's like, okay, we take these struggling artists who are prone to socialism and we make them just fucking rich and they'll be Americans because then they'll be rich. Yeah. And that was stated policy. That's, again, not conspiracy. That's the stated fucking policy of the CIA. So they would indirectly fund art shows, art galleries, tours, all these stuff for modern artists in the 50s that probably wouldn't have made a mark had they not had that funding. Because let's face it, you know this just through your work in entertainment. if you don't have the money to back this shit up, it's really hard to break through. Just straight up is.
Sure is. Yeah. Yeah.
And so if suddenly someone like Jackson Pollock, whose wife was already deep in the art scene, of course, so it wasn't like he was never going to make it, but not that big to the point now where he's considered one of the greatest of all times while he was alive, that was directly fucking funded by the CIA. And there's receipts to back it up. There's plenty of testimony to back it up. It's not, again, it's a conspiracy that's real. MK Ultra, it's a conspiracy that's real. And that doesn't mean that it's something that is completely outside of the realm of reason, because conspiracies happen all the fucking time. We just find out about probably 1% of them.
Yeah. And we'll link to an independent article about the CIA and modern art. And one, it mentions that even back when that scene was active, they were like, is the CIA doing this? Are we getting CIA money? It was a rumor in that scene that, guys, I think the CIA might be backing us.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do in that situation?
Right.
You're not going to track down where the money's coming from and tell them to stop. You're getting to pursue your passion. And so what if the CIA's taking that shit to Russia and being like, hey, you know how here all of your paintings have to show people working hard and loving the government? Look what you get to do in the United States. Way better, right?
Yeah.
Don't you hate communism now?
And that's it as well. I think people get mistaken of these big, huge movements of, oh, you need to do a fucking land invasion and blah, 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 and all these big events that are between countries and cultures. And it's not that. It's chipping away a tiny bit at a time. And it's death by a million cuts is what the whole intelligence community works as. They don't work as an, oh, we're going to fucking replay D-Day and fight the Nazis. They work in, we're going to slowly pick apart every single thread we can until the sweater falls apart. And that's kind of the dissonance I think people miss in what the intelligence operations do.
Yeah.
In their essence. It's called espionage and intelligence. It's not called, you know, hot warfare.
Right. And this idea that they were supporting modern art, like you said, it's confirmed. It's not a rumor.
Right.
The article we'll link to talks a lot about the history of how it came to be. It was part of a policy called Long Leash. And it's
great
people
name.
Should really read this article if you're one of those people that's skeptical of the idea that, hey, maybe that singer is also in the CIA. It's possible, maybe. If you're skeptical of it, read this article.
Yeah. But also there's this thing as well where I think there are some cases, and the whole Elvis thing with the FBI kind of plays into this, where I bet there are a lot of artists where they could full on reach out, bring them into Langley and be like, listen, you have some amazing power. We believe in you. How about we help you out? And I think there are people out there that would say yes.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, going back to kind of the inception of the CIA, they had people in Paramount as executives. They had people in Warner Brothers as executives who would just sit there and read scripts and look for the right writers, the right directors, the right actors. And they'd bring them in and be like, hey, we're doing this. Do you want to be patriotic or not? Do you want to fight for your country or not? And of course, at that time, you have a lot of people coming off World War II where they had fought over there and they had seen the horrificness of all that. And then CIA comes along or MI6 comes along or whatever and says, hey, let's avoid that and let's fight them instead of in the streets. Let's fight them in the art galleries. Let's fight them on the radio. Let's fight them in the movie theaters. That's tempting, man. I can see people like Catherine Bigelow, who obviously makes a lot of CIA positive films with the help of the CIA, being like, yeah, let's throw a bone to patriotism and our soldiers and make this movie like Zero Dark Thirty or fucking Hurt Locker.
Yeah. And one of the other things that's brought up in this article is that this was a thing the CIA was interested in immediately upon being founded. And of course they were, if one third of the founding members was also fucking playing sax in the corner, hitting an upright bass while they're talking about destroying communism.
Yeah.
Of course they were interested in it. And this article mentions that the CIA set up a division called the Propaganda Assets Inventory. Propaganda. Just want to say that word again for people who think it doesn't apply to this country. Holy shit, it sure does.
Yeah.
And here is a terrifying passage from this article. Dismayed at the appeal communism still had for many intellectuals and artists in the West, the new agency set up a division, the Propaganda Assets Inventory, which at its peak could influence more than 800 newspapers, magazine, and public information organizations. They joked that it was like a Wurlitzer jukebox. When the CIA pushed a button, it could hear whatever tune it wanted playing across the world. And that's in the fucking 40s.
Yeah.
Imagine what they're up to now with social media and streaming and messaging apps. Yeah. It's so much easier now.
So much. I mean, this is sort of tangentially related. When we grew up, we had 3-4 channels. Maybe we had cable, but they were all American channels unless you lived on a border state, right? Where you would get telenovela, yeah, or you'd get a CBC or something like that. Then right, satellite dishes came around and maybe you got Deutsche Welle and BBC or something like that. But that was super, super, super rare well into the 90s and 2000s, right? So our generation grew up with like American media, period. Today, kids are growing up, but we have everything. We can watch Indian movies on Netflix. We can watch Korean TV shows on Apple TV. We can listen to every fucking thing from everywhere on YouTube or Spotify. We have access to everything, which also means everybody else kind of has access to everything. Obviously, there are internet quality issues around the world that change, but that means it has gotten so much easier to infiltrate all these things and manipulate them because everything's everywhere now. You can choose which country's media you want to be a fan of and be a fan of that media so much more easily now than ever before. And so for situations like this as an intelligence where it's a propaganda arm, and literally psychological warfare and propaganda are the number one and number two sort of missions of that service, it's so, so, so much more easier than having to put something on fucking Voice of America on the radio that somebody might tune into if they're allowed to have a radio. Now it's like people are on YouTube and TikTok and can just scroll through this shit and see it instantly. And you're telling me they're not using this as much as they possibly can to their highest benefit?
I also would not be surprised if it at some point the CIA was involved in the development of streaming music.
Right.
Because there is a scientific principle, paradox of choice, which basically, once you have access to too much stuff, it's almost as bad as having access to nothing.
Yeah.
Because there's so much out there now that it's like everyone has a chance and everything sort of matters. And at that point, does anything matter?
Right.
And I feel like music has gotten cheapened to the point that we're never really going to have to worry about a huge protest song that's really pushing the needle in one direction or another, unless it comes from someone like Taylor Swift.
Right.
We all have so many choices. We might know about that song for a day, and then there's going to be a 100 Gex album.
And you've touched on this before very well in the fact that there were no Trump protest songs. None.
No.
I mean, if there were, they certainly didn't break through the ether.
And Eminem put one out, I believe, 3 days before the election. It's like, no rush, fuckface. Thanks.
Right. But you know what I mean? Like, remember the Bush era? Everybody fucking had one. You know?
Oh, wait. I should point out the one big Trump protest song, Fuck Donald Trump, featuring YG and a rapper who was killed in weird MK Ultra fashion in Los Angeles, Nipsey Hussle.
Nipsey Hussle. There you go.
There's an interview with a rapper. I believe it's Lil Boozy. I think he calls himself Boozy Badass now. And they asked him why he didn't make any songs about Trump. And he was like, because Trump will have the CIA kill me. Damn. And
that's valid.
And Bush, there were so many. So many.
Yeah. And even Reagan and like Clinton all those years through. I mean, even fucking Neil Young in Ohio, there's always been these great protest songs against the powers that be. And I think, God, I can't remember who did it now. I'm sorry. But somebody, it was fucking of all people. It was Bill Maher said this in one of his new rules, which I'm not a Bill Maher fan. I'm not trying to support him. But he brought up so much of our mainstream music is about fucking Gucci and Louis Vuitton and having a Tesla and being so excited to be a ultra capitalist rich prick and have all this wealth, all this bullshit, commercialized fucking show off crap from Lady Gaga to rappers to fucking Taylor Swift to everybody. And he's like, what the fuck happened to the protest song? What the fuck happened to music being about something aspirational that wasn't fucking capitalism. It's like, yeah, a blind pig finds a truffle every now and then.
Speaking of that, not to keep going back to my tangent about celebrities who I think might be government agents, I would also throw LL Cool J into that mix, because if you look at, people always focus on, well, gangster rap came along and killed conscious rap. Because if people aren't familiar, rap up until gangster rap happened, it was a movement. It was a political movement. You had some rappers, even if a rapper's whole fucking image was, I'm just the best rapper in the world, that's all I really want to do, they'd have a song about how the black community should stop using drugs. They would have a conscious song on that album.
Yes.
Every fucking time. And gangster rap came along and killed that in one way. But I would argue the person who introduced materialism into rap music is LL Cool J on the 1989 album Walking with a Panther, which is an album that followed his huge breakthrough album. And it just took a suspiciously long time to come out. And when it finally came out, at a point when most rappers were still doing conscious rap, it was all about champagne and expensive clothes. And people were like, what the fuck is this shit? And now it's just what rap is. Yeah, and look at the career that fucking guy has had. Is he that good of an actor? Is LL Cool J that good of an actor that he should have? That motherfucker's been on NCIS LA since 1970 or something.
Yeah.
Who's exactly watching that shit?
Yeah, it's bizarre, man, because you can't deny that shift, and that shift doesn't come out of nowhere. And,
no.
And also the fact that it, with a few small exceptions, completely obliterated conscious rap to the point where, like you said, Nipsey Hussle, I mean, even I hate to bring up Kanye West, but something happened to that dude, man. And I'm not sure. I don't believe the whole, oh, he has mental illness, let's get it, he's sick, he needs help. So maybe he's just dumb and he was easily manipulated, because some people are just dumb. They are. I mean, maybe he lost his mind after his mom died. I don't know. But something fucking happened to that dude where he has gone so far off the rails that he went from being like George Bush hates black people on September 11th tele show to now thinking that he doesn't even want to hire black people at his fucking private school because they don't work hard enough. And it's like, it's crazy how that guy turned so hard, 180, to the point where it's like, maybe it's mental illness. I'm not saying it's not or anything like that, but mental illness doesn't forgive racism like that and just hideousness that he's become. I'm sorry, it doesn't. And it's like, oh, well, Hitler was just mentally ill, let's forgive him too. It's like, no, fuck you. He was a piece of shit and he was dumb. Problem was, he was a dumb fuck.
Acted on the things he said a little more than Kanye West does.
Of course. Yeah. I didn't mean that as a comparison. I said, like, dumb people do dumb shit and can be manipulated. Yeah. And so, you going back to the heart of the show, when the whole Taylor Swift thing came up last year and everyone was literally laughing off that there was any involvement with CIA or intelligence with Taylor Swift, it was like, nobody took her to Langley and sat her down and was like, hey, you're going to be a operative now. But the idea that there isn't a CIA operative or an FBI operative in her entourage, in her close crew, in her management, I mean, we know for a fact there's CIA in agencies and management companies in Hollywood. We know for a fact they're all over the production companies, whether they be music or film or TV. That's just a known fact. And the CIA is proud of it to the point where they have a webpage that talks about their involvement in the entertainment industry. The idea that there isn't anyone there sort of massaging that powerful person towards certain things is crazy to think.
Yeah. And they have the money to spend. We know that. We know they have a Silicon Valley investment wing called, I think it's called Intel Q, that invests in the CIA. You're not going to believe this, America. The CIA were one of the original funders of Google Earth.
Facebook.
The project that lets you look at anything on the computer by typing in fucking coordinates. Oh, the CIA was in on that? No. Right. Come on.
And they're one of the original funders of Facebook. I mean, that's not a conspiracy theory. You can go to CBS News and look up the articles from 10, 15 years ago where it's laid out clearly with the shell companies they use to fund it like that. Yeah. And that doesn't go away. They don't just say, well, cut our losses. What? No.
No.
And
Yeah. One of the examples we will also put in the notes is the song Winds of Change by Scorpions.
Right.
Which there's a whole podcast series about how the CIA maybe probably wrote that song.
Yeah. And the people in that podcast are way too positive about what that means. They're like, this is so cool. CIA fucking helped bring down the wall. And they and it's like, do you not understand they can use that against you too?
Man, that is a mainstream media podcast for you.
Right.
To not even question the implications of that. I haven't listened to it, but I assume they make it sound like movie shit.
Argo or
something without
exactly
ever once being like, oh, so what about those other rumors about the CIA and music? Are those true too? Bring that up on New Yorker podcast and they're going to be like, oh, we don't engage in conspiracy theories here.
Yeah. Well, the thing I don't understand is all this stuff is well documented. And I do understand that you can't know everything about everything. Some of this stuff, just unless you're interested in how the intelligence worlds work, a lot of this can slip by you and that's fine. What I don't understand is the immediate, no, this can't be true. We're not like that. We're better than blah, blah, blah. And they only use this against the communists or the terrorists or whoever the fuck is imaginary villains in our minds. And it's like, but you understand they use it against us too, because they need us to actually fight one day. And they need us to be on the right side, their side, quote unquote, which is the sort of thing where it's like, this is psychological warfare. That's the name of the fucking department. I know I'm a broken record there, but it's on us too. We're part of that.
Yeah. And one of the last things I want to talk about, I didn't put a lot of notes in the notes about it because my internet mysteriously went out about 10 minutes before we were due to record this. It was out for about 40 minutes. Fine. No, nothing weird about that.
Adam, coincidence, pure coincidence.
Pure coincidence. CIA has to own a bunch of record labels, right? It wouldn't do to just own one. They got to own indie labels.
Hip hop, jazz, world music.
Yeah.
Going back to Copeland, Miles Copeland III. That's what he literally did.
Yeah. Founded a record label.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll link to a couple articles about musicians who were just also CIA. And sometimes without even the knowledge of their bandmates. Their bandmates didn't even know. And that is a thing that has to happen so much.
Yes.
And
I think one of them is a hip hop group in Cuba. Modern times, this isn't in, you know, the 50s or 60s. A rapper in Cuba now, basically, was just straight up a CIA operative.
Yeah, there was a rapper, what is his name? Tekashi 6ix9ine.
Right.
There is a whole lot of suggestion that guy is a CIA plant. And the reason people think that is at first, he was just a goofy looking fella who kept getting spotted around New York City or wherever he was from because of how he looked. And he blew up on social media over that and then takes this weird months long trip to Eastern Europe, where he learns to become a rapper and then comes back and just blows up in rap, followed by so many allegations that he's also a government informant. Right.
And you know, Eastern Europe, traditionally the heart of hip hop.
Yeah, who goes to Eastern Europe to learn to rap? What the fuck is that?
Yeah, I went to South Dakota so I could learn about Black culture.
Yeah. Yeah. If there is a rap academy in Eastern Europe, it's because the CIA runs it. If you put it in Detroit, people would be like, that's the CIA, I think. But Eastern Europe, no one cares.
Yeah. And also there's the practicality of this. We 100% run operations. CIA has NGOs. If you see an anti-corruption NGO anywhere in the world, it's 99 times out of 100 CIA backed. So
yeah. Like,
and that's kind of common knowledge now. I mean, there's that whole thing with the Mexican president last year calling out the U.S. for running anti-corruption NGOs in Mexico with CIA money. All this stuff is very obvious. And we do shit like that all over through the USIA, the United States Information Agency, where we send out music, literally music. We send out books. We send out newspapers. We send out movies to just kind of brainwash people in other countries all the time. The idea that doesn't come back on us is crazy to me. This is all stuff that happens and is well documented all the time. And like you said, you'll link to some of the blatant examples in, I think, Uganda and Cuba, where band members in modern times, today, not 50 years ago, were straight up CIA operatives. No clandestine, oh, we're working through this shell corporation through, like with Jackson Pollock or Louis Armstrong, where they weren't like direct operatives. It was like, no, direct people in the CIA. And this is where a lot of, when you watch American media about CIA, whether it be fucking What's Clear and Present Danger, Jack Ryan, or Zero Dark Thirty, or any of those CIA funded things where it's either you're Jason Bourne or you're a fat dude in a suit in Langley and there's no in between. It's like, yeah, there's in between. There are people who look like everybody you can imagine. There are people working in the CIA with fucking face tattoos and dreads. And they are card-carrying members on the payroll, not fucking clandestine members through a shell company. The CIA has everybody, every look, every sort of culture represented, because how would they get into them without that?
Yeah. Jesse Ventura, very famously in an interview, I say very famously, and I doubt anyone's heard this interview, so I don't know why I'm saying that. But he, at one point, I think it was on his conspiracy theory show that was on for a few seasons, talks about becoming governor of Minnesota and how when that happens, when you're elected governor of a state, you have a meeting with the CIA. And I imagine everyone who becomes a government official has a meeting with the CIA, whether they know it or not. But his whole thing was, they look like your neighbor. They look like the cashier at the store. Like your picture, and like you said, the guy from the office, but with a gun. And no, it's the guy from your office, but with a gun. Exactly. It's not Jim from the office. It's Tim who sits next to you.
Yeah.
That guy from your office is actually what the CIA looks like.
Yeah.
And
it's very true.
Yeah. And I have a whole bit that I do on stage. I don't do the spy part of it as often. I have a whole bit about rich people going on these misadventures, and then we have to spend tax money to bail them out.
Right.
But I sometimes when I do the joke, I bring up the case of those three American hikers who were taken into custody in Iran on suspicion of being spies.
Yeah.
When all they were really doing, Zach, was going on a hiking trip in Iraq in like 2014. And it's like, man, if you were an American, you had no reason to be hiking in Iraq at the time, unless you're trying to spy on Iran, honestly. I think that's kind of the only reason to be that close to that border at that point.
Yeah, and there was so much. I remember that vividly because I've done travel similar to that. And there's so many holes in their story when they came back. And I was like, you guys are talking in your ass right now. We just decided to go for it. We had no idea we were crossing the border in Iran. I was like, yeah, you did. You don't fuck that up. And I can tell you from travel in Afghanistan and Badakhshan, Americans aren't welcome there. And they will ask you to leave vehemently because they don't want you there in case something happens to you. And then we just fucking flatten their village, you know?
Right.
Because that's what we would do. Whether, like I've always said, I don't think we're the good guys you think we are. And so it's the sort of thing where, like whenever shit like that pops up, or when somebody shows up in North Korea suddenly in prison, I was like, what the fuck were you doing in North Korea that they actually arrested you and put you in prison? You were doing something that you should not have been and got caught, and fuck you.
That I think is kind of the dividing line when you hear a story like that. North Korea takes people into custody all the time. The question is, do we just let them sit there until they're brain dead like Otto Warmbier?
Right.
Or do we send Bill Clinton over there to get Lisa Ling's sister out?
Right.
What was she doing over there?
Something that merited a lot of our tax dollars bringing her home.
Yeah.
Again, those are two great examples of just regular ass looking people, nerdy fucking, like, what are you doing there in the first place? Because that's the sort of people that are out there too. Like you said, it's Tim at your office who's probably been relaying information about you to somebody else. And again, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be fucking John Lennon to have somebody looking after you. You can just have traveled to the wrong places at the wrong times, or you could have just fucking been listening to wrong podcasts at this point, or wrong podcasts in their assumption. And they're just like, who is this guy? Why is he listening to all this shit? And well, what's he going to do about it? And how many guns does he have? And how many cars does he have? And how much fucking fertilizer does he have in his work shed? And it's like, all that shit adds up, and they have access to it all now because everything's fucking on your phone and digitalized. We all pretend that, oh, we're impervious to this shit, or we're so strong, or we have these ethics and morals that are concrete. And dude, we all have our soft spots. I don't care who you are. Everyone has something that the especially the fucking CIA, who has been working tirelessly since the 1940s to break our minds, can get to all of us. And so the sort of the idea is, oh, Tim will never fucking squeal on me, or, oh, my wife will never squeal on me. Bullshit. You put somebody in the right situation in the right time with the right pressures and the right points, everybody breaks, man. And this sort of it's the sort of thing where, again, going back to an earlier point where I would wager well over 70% of Americans, if actually taken to Langley and said, hey, we need to, your help to do this, that, or the other for patriotism, they're going to say yes. No matter what it is. And that might be fucking overthrowing a democratically elected government in fucking El Salvador, but I'm doing it for my country, man. Yeah. And so there's going to be some people who question that and be like, fuck you. No, I'm not fucking doing your dirty work.
And see, then that's when it becomes, oh, you won't? Well, let's talk about how you will.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that comes to back to the, when you're talking about musicians, when you're talking about actors, whatever, artists, they don't need to take them to Langley and be like, hey, you need to do this or else. They can just be like, hey, why don't we think about this? Why don't we think about that? Why don't you look what happened with Olivia Rodrigo recently, where she was giving out morning after pills at her concerts and then suddenly stopped because it got too crazy. Wonder what really was behind her stopping that. Was maybe somebody in her entourage who was maybe associated with the government who was like, hey, we want to keep you safe. We don't want you to get hurt. We don't want anybody to get hurt at your concerts. Remember what happened to Ariana Grande in Manchester? Sure would be shitty if that happened to you with some crazy white supremacist in Texas who's so anti-abortion that they do something like that. Maybe we should pull back on this, Olivia. And she, of course, would say fucking yes, because that's scary.
Yeah,
but it has nothing to do with anybody being fucking recruited. It's just like these people with this much influence on culture have clandestine people in their entourages that they don't fucking know about, but are in their ear. It's easy to manipulate people who are so isolated from reality. It really is, because it's sort of like, if you're in the room with them, you must be special sort of thing. And that's how they kind of treat you. Because if you got in that room, you got in that room, right? And so, and think about the people who can, going back to our original point, think about the people who can get into any room, like the CIA or the FBI or Mossad or MI6 or whoever the fuck, because that's what they're trained to do. They're trained to get in those rooms because, again, going back to our original point, they literally created the CIA with producers and writers and artists and musicians and people who were already in this world. They didn't. Yes, they recruited people from that world, but the point was cultural warfare. Cultural warfare means you start from that point. But of course, Taylor Swift, she's too smart to have anybody like that in her crew. So she's impervious and they've gotten good at it. They've been perfecting it. They've been practicing it. They've been working on it. Like I said, they've been working on psychological warfare since 1947. You don't think they're good at it yet? It's been almost 100 years. They figured some shit out by now.
They successfully got all of us with all of our diverse opinions and beliefs and prejudices. Someone successfully got us all to come out from our various corners of the internet and agree that, yes, we all hate each other, but we should also all be on Facebook.
Right. Like, that's crazy.
That's got to be the government at work, because it was so much better when I could just go talk about Oasis with people who like Oasis and not have to get comments from white nationalists, I guess. The government's real good at what they do. And here's the thing. That's my government.
Yeah.
USA.
I 100% remember the days where we'd be at a bar having a conversation about something we were having a conversation about, and some drunk asshole would chime in from another table, and it would be like, I get to fight you now for daring to fucking put your dumbass opinion in my community's fucking. Yeah. And it was like, I, not that I'm proud of any bar fights I got in before, but I used to get in bar fights because people would be like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And they come in and tell you what they wanted to goddamn tell you about what you're talking about. I'm like, I don't know you. I don't care. Like, how dare you come over here thinking that? And then we turn that into our fucking reality, where everybody gets to comment on your table's conversation with, I mean this as a joke, without the bar fight aspect where I can kick your ass to get you away from me.
And we did it willingly. We didn't have to be dragged kicking and screaming to Facebook. They made it so only a certain group of people could have it at first. And who? The youngs, the cool kids. And then we were just like, fucking let me at it. Let me at it. And yeah. Goodbye, democracy.
Hello, and, genocide in Burma and China and India. Not to be end this on too bad of a note. I don't know how you get off this ride, man. I really don't.
I don't think we do.
Not even looking at this election or being like about any of that, but it's just like, I don't see the solution. I don't see a fix that's going to come along because there's too many people that are too, their brains are too melted now. They're too addicted to the dopamine. It's gone too far to the point where how do you turn that around without really hurting a lot of people?
And people act like divide and conquer isn't the most famous strategy of all time.
Yeah.
And think about how divided we are now. And I say it all the time. All it's really done is made it so this government can do whatever they want, always with about 50% support of the public.
Yep.
Because if one side says it, the other side's going to say it's bad. Like national internet, I always bring up, we obviously need it. But one side mentions it and the other side will be like, fuck you, you fascists. You're not building national internet. We will when we get in office.
Yeah.
And then we get in office and the right is like, you fucking fascists are not building a national internet, turning our kids into trans people. Right. Just joking. We wouldn't call them people, obviously.
No. I've taken up so much of your time. I really appreciate it, but we should probably wrap up. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's our episode.
Yeah.
Hey, Zach, thank you so much for doing the pod. I appreciate it. What do you have to plug before we get out of here?
So I officially had my last day at UpRox last month, and I am now chief brand officer for Blackwood Distilling. So I've got some whiskey and rye that's going to be headed your way so you can taste it. And
into it. Very into it.
We are a Kentucky brand now. We started in 2020, and I was brought on to extend the brand just nationwide and internationally. So I'm going to be your go-to guy if you need some bourbon or rye. And look me up at ZTP Whiskey on Instagram. You can find me there and you can see where I'm heading next so you can try it too if I'm in your neighborhood.
Very nice. And I think that's it. Let's get the fuck out of here. Zach, say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.
People of Earth, your planet is about to be destroyed.